This is Ozarks at Large. Fort Smith has been creating history for nearly 200 years. From the trials inside Judge Parker's courtroom to the clandestine meetings inside Miss Laura's, there have been stories collected and shared. But some of those stories have faded over time. Ben Bolin has given many of them renewed attention in his column in the Southwest Times Record newspaper devoted to the city and region's history. And some of those accounts are included in his new book, Hidden History of Fort Smith, Arkansas. He'll discuss his book tomorrow afternoon at the Fort Smith Museum of History, Saturday afternoon at Bell Star Antiques, and on the 24th at Books A Million. Yesterday, I reached Ben at his home, and I asked him about one of the more notorious chapters in the city's history, the Row, where prostitution was legal into the 20th century.
Yeah, the Row was unique. It was, you know, legal prostitution in Fort Smith, its own little vice district prescribed by city ordinance, and it pops up in a couple places elsewhere in the book, I think. I think I mentioned it in the chapter on Rise and Fall of John Heskett Wright and some of that. But it's, yeah, it's still remembered, of course, and at the Visitor Center, Miss Laura's Visitor Center downtown. So.
Well, yes, anyone familiar with Fort Smith knows about Miss Laura's and how it was a brothel. And I guess for some of us at least, we assume that, well, that was a very bygone era, and perhaps it was somewhat illegal. But prostitution, part of Fort Smith was still legal in the 20th century.
Yeah, it was technically, it's kind of funny what happens. If you look at the police dockets in the late 1890s, early 20th century, right before prostitution was legal in 1907, and it the ordinance didn't repeal until 23 or 24, but what happens is, before it's legal in 1907, they pretty regularly, it seems like, I didn't look at a calendar to check it, but it's like they knew that, like, you know, the second Tuesday of every month was raid night. And so all the men probably knew not to be there that night. And all the women would be rounded up and the madams, and they would be fined certain amounts. And then when it was legalized, they turned those into license fees. Well, when they make it illegal again, they turn those license fees back into fines. and up until the mid-70s, my understanding is that what they would do is they would continue, even when prostitution moved outside the Row to the Como and other hotels, they would still do these regular raids, and they would find them, and the health department would examine the women for venereal disease, or I guess we call them STDs today, and put them back out.
Well, and speaking of raids, there were all kinds of raids for a time on gambling houses, trying to wipe out gambling.
Yeah, I think a lot of people would be amazed, because a lot of the things that we associate now with Indian casinos around or over the border, but near Fort Smith, like in Pocola at the Choctaw Casino and the Cherokee casinos in Roland and Salsa, you could get all that in the city pretty much back in, you know, 100 years ago. They had roulette tables, they had craps tables and dealers, croupiers, and these often in these second stories above pool halls, and pool halls, of course, were legal. And they even had a form of off-track betting. They had, ticker tape results from tracks like Oaklawn and others, and a guy who would stand up there and probably kind of, I always imagined in the cadence of a racehorse commentator, just, you know, very rapidly reading off the results and dramatically, and men betting and that kind of thing. So it was wide open in that sense. But they did crack down on it in pretty dramatic fashion. And I'm not sure they just drove it further underground. I've not found any evidence. Maybe they were successful in stamping it out for a time. But yeah, that definitely went on as well. I mean, Fort Smith was a wide open town in many ways.
And I should point out that not all of the material in Hidden History of Fort Smith, Arkansas by Ben Bolin is about prostitution, gambling, and crime. But I do want to bring up one more.
Okay.
Pretty Boy Floyd lived for a time in Fort Smith.
Yep.
And Bonnie and Clyde had a relationship with Fort Smith as well, albeit
yep.
brief.
Yeah, theirs was much briefer than Pretty Boy Floyd. And Pretty Boy Floyd's house is over on a street right near Tillis Park. In fact, if I remember right, the backyard of the house directly abuts Tillis Park, which is between Grand and Kincaid in Fort Smith. And I don't want to give out the address because it's a private home, mm-hmm. but I often thought it should be, it would be very easy to get that on the National Register because I think the house is essentially in its original condition. But he came here and hid out, used a false name, cover story that he was a traveling salesman, and lived for about 6 months in the 30s with his wife and young son there. And apparently he was told, at least by his son or family, that particular six-month stretch was one of their happiest times as a family. Their son was in, Pretty Boy Floyd's son was in school, and they went and, you know, even, I think I put in there, they went and saw Frankenstein.
At one of the many movie theaters, yeah.
Yeah, and I believe he at least committed a couple robberies during that period, but... And then Bonnie and Clyde hid out here when they were on the lam, and I think Bonnie Parker had been injured in a car crash, had some burns, and holed up in a motel tourist court on Midland Boulevard, which is now occupied by a pick-and-toe convenience store. And they hid out here for several days when a couple of their... fellow henchmen or partners in crime got bored and pulled off a shot a town sheriff in Alma. They fled again. I'm not sure where they went, but you know they were ultimately, of course, killed, as was Pretty Boy Floyd. So, but they Fort Smith continued to have an association with notorious outlaws even in the 30s.
The first airplane flight in the state of Arkansas took place, started off from Fort Smith Ground, is that correct?
Yeah, Bud Mars, James C. Bud Mars, who had a pilot's license, I believe, reportedly signed by the Wright brothers. And it was the first flight in Fort Smith and I believe the first flight in Arkansas. And I read another authority, it was clear they were trying to disprove what I had found, but could not. And they said, well, it's the earliest recorded flight in Fort Smith. Like they couldn't, it was someone out of Little Rock. Like they couldn't believe that we had the first plane flight. But they may turn out to be right. There may be something that I've overlooked, but I couldn't find anything earlier that had been written about. And he was brought in here to do that. I mean, as an exhibition, and he flew over. Parts of North Fort Smith and the river.
Finally, I want to ask you about a person who I'd never heard of before I picked this book up, and it's a shame that I hadn't and that more people haven't, and that's Dimple Johnson. She owns quite a historic milestone, doesn't she?
Yeah, and I keep meaning to, and I will dig more into her personal story, but yeah, she was the first dental hygienist in Fort Smith, and even more significantly discovered recently, you could call her the first Southern woman to vote in a public election in America.
And she did that in 1917.
Yeah, it was before the passage of the constitutional amendment that gave women the right to vote, which was a couple years later. But she, what happened is, in early 1917, I believe February, the state legislature passed a law allowing women to vote in party primaries. And because they could do that by statute, they didn't have to amend the Constitution to do that. So they said, well, let's go ahead and do that. At least we can get that out of the way. And so they did, but the first statewide primaries weren't scheduled until, I think, May 1918. They had a very different electoral schedule then. And what happened is people have to read the book because it's a lot, very complicated story you probably don't have time for. But the short of it is there was a special mayoral election called. And under the law, or due to some technicalities, it was considered a primary. So women were allowed to vote in the primary. And Dimple Johnson cast her vote, the first vote in a southern state by a woman in a public election, as far as I can determine, because Arkansas was the first southern state to allow women to vote in any election, I believe, at 8 a.m. November 13th, 1917. And I think I know where.
Oh, really?
Yeah, the building's still there. It's an office near the corner of North 6th and A Street, and it was a fire station back then, which makes sense. It'd be a city fire station. It's a city election, so would it make sense to use that as a polling place? And the reason it came up is there was another woman who was a school teacher who started. She had been the first woman voter, and so the Southwest American, which Dimple Johnson worked for, by that point, sent a reporter down to look at the poll books and determine that the other woman, the school teacher, had voted at a polling place that opened just a few minutes late on that morning. And then Dimple Johnson's had opened on time, and so they considered her to be the first voter.
Ben, thank you so much for the book and for your time.
Oh, you're welcome.
Ben Bolden is the author of the new book, Hidden History of Fort Smith, Arkansas. He's written about the city's history in his column for the Southwest Times Record newspaper, and he'll discuss the book tomorrow from 4 until 6 at the Fort Smith Museum of History. He'll also be at Bell Star Antiques Saturday afternoon from 2 until 4, and at Books A Million March 24th from 1 until 3. You can hear more from our conversation online, including the glory days of pro wrestling in Fort Smith with the likes of Sputnik Monroe and Gorgeous George, and much more. That is an audio extra that you can hear at OzarksAtLarge.com.